for America.
Mohammed shows up in a place like Tampico, Mexico, and for $1,500 he gets Mexican identity documents. And so Mohammed becomes Manuel.
Fighting for Idaho.
People think Netanyahu is like Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz. As far as Israeli politics go, he is not the Ronald Reagan or Ted Cruz of Israeli politics. He's more like the Jeb Bush.
Fighting for you.
Hopefully the younger generation is paying attention and wake up and don't vote for a political party. Vote for the person and what they really are.
Boise's Mr. Right.
I think she's a new addition to the Miller Militia.
Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, Kevin Miller with you here. Another day at 580 KIDO. Joining us now in our newsmaker chair, not to be confused with our newsmaker line, is Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. And I know a lot of you Alan L. Morton, attorney at law fans are just chomping at the bit to hear the brilliance of our great friend at 580KIDO. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. I thought that we would get some legal perspective on a lot of things going on before the Supreme Court. Certainly some cultural issues. We've got the issue involving same-sex marriage. We've got the issue involving Obamacare. We've got the other issue involving, you know, the illegals, whether or not that'll be taken up. And a lot of litigation going on right now. And I'd like to start, if you don't mind, with the Obamacare arguments. It was pretty forceful a couple weeks ago. And you've been up there, right? You've been to the Supreme Court. You've done these cases, correct?
Well, air crash cases, yes. We've been up to the Supreme Court a few times. You know, the big question here in the minds of conservative legal advocates is whether Chief Justice Roberts can bring himself to crush Obamacare, you know, at this time after he dashed their hopes in 2012.
Right. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. But before we get to that, having been at the Supreme Court, how is it different from a regular court? For those of us that don't know at 580KIDO, is it entirely different? Is it, how does it differ from something that we would see at Ada County?
Well, there's a big difference between the function of an appellate court, such as the Supreme Court, and that of a trial judge. The trial court is essentially arbiters concerning facts, and they're supposed to apply the facts to law. The appellate courts, however, are limited in their scope of review of the lower court's decisions to determine whether or not the lower court acted appropriately under the law in applying the facts to the law. They will not rehash or override a lower court's decision on the ruling of facts, but with respect to law, they will review to determine whether or not the trial judge acted appropriately. And in this case, with the Supreme Court, what they're reviewing is not so much whether the trial court judge acted appropriately, but rather the Circuit Court of Appeals.
Right. However, at 580KIDO, usually you call witnesses, but here it seems like the judges, and maybe that's how it's argued at the Idaho Supreme Court as well, the judges grill the attorneys.
Well, that's the nuance of appellate advocacy. It appears that sometimes that it's the show between the who can one up one justice to another, and that the lawyers have very little to say. They begin typically with a statement of fact, and then the justices go right after it. And it's their show. They have questions, and they expect to be addressed specifically not to the presentation that you've prepared, but rather to address the questions rendered by the court. There's only one justice that typically doesn't participate in oral argument, or hasn't historically, and that's Clarence Thomas. He's been the silent justice over the course of the years. I don't think he's ever asked one single solitary question in open court. But the justices will have their flesh, as they say, and you better be prepared. You know, anytime you go before the Supreme Court, you're going to be reviewing anywhere between 300 to possibly even 1,000 cases in precedent that are directly related or indirectly related to the topic at hand. And the court expects you to be able to render discussion on any one of those cases. It is a mind-boggling experience to be before the court. I've had the opportunity to work with trial attorneys and appellate attorneys in preparing briefs before the high court. It's really an ominous situation when you're seeing that experience. And depending upon whether or not the court is hot or cold, which is how they pursue you in your questioning, really kind of gives you an idea of what direction some of the justices are headed.
Well, that's where I'd like to start when we're talking about Obamacare. Is it possible to really determine how the court is going to rule based on the questions during what they call that opening arguments or only arguments, or is it possible?
That's a great question. And we've had many people on this program talk about Obamacare before the first decision was rendered about how the law was unconstitutional and it wouldn't take much to strike it. And here came the Chief Justice out of the blue, essentially, and affirmed Obamacare based upon an argument that wasn't really presented during the oral argument, but was based on a taxation issue. Very interesting ordeal. The issue before the court this time is totally different. And it would be very difficult for me to see Chief Justice Roberts or any other associate justice discuss Obamacare in terms of taxation in this particular case, because this issue is framed on a limited basis as to whether or not the executive branch overstepped its authority and bounds in essentially ignoring the written statute itself, right, and basically nullifying the statute.
Right. For those of us that are speaking English here and are not at your intellectual level, I'll say for me at 580KIDO, what is the essential argument against Obamacare at this time? Doesn't it have to do with four words or something like that?
Well, you're dealing with the credit issue and the trust issue. When you were going in and some states had the opportunity to form their own exchanges to purchase from brokers in the state at the state level insurance policies that fit the paradigm of the what's referred to as Obamacare, the health care policies. And other states elected to purchase those policies through the federal exchange. And where the controversy exists in this particular case deals with the state exchanges. There was a loophole in the statute, which essentially provided tax credits or tax deductions for those who purchased their insurance through the federal exchange. But that provision wasn't set forth in the case where you bought a policy through the state exchange. And having discovered that error, Obama chose to simply write an executive order that would give tax credits, or it was actually the IRS who rendered a decision and an order saying we're going to give everybody a tax credit. And the opponents to Obamacare said, well, wait a minute. That's not what the law says. It's only those who bought their policies through the federal exchange that are entitled to the tax credit, not those that purchased from the state. Determining whether or not the executive branch, in this case the IRS, overstepped its bounds by essentially writing a new law out of whole cloth. And so it's going to be real interesting to see. We kind of have an idea in a number of the cases that this court has rendered that give us a clue on what's referred to as the broad authority of the executive branch or the broad discretion of the executive branch in a number of cases, including immigration, that might tend to believe that, setting aside the personalities of Obama and other presidents, and just looking at the power of the office, the power of the executive branch, the judiciary has seemed to give great weight to the power of the executive branch in being able to fulfill its function.
Right. This might be a little too deep, so let me get back to this.
Well, what they're saying is the bottom line is if you ask the question, what do you think the Supreme Court's going to do here?
No, I didn't. Not yet.
Well, that's the $64,000 question and the $64 million question.
And we'll get to that in a minute. But back to my original point, because I have the phrase right now, established by the state. So the health exchanges that were established by the state, correct?
Correct. Some of them.
So
Idaho did not.
Now you have the expansion of Obamacare, the IRS, which the critics or the plaintiffs in this case have said have had their powers expanded. Could lead to some foreclosures, and that the IRS is an invalid misinterpretation of the law.
Well, that's correct. In this particular case, the issue is going to be is whether or not the state, the policies that were purchased by and through the state exchanges would be afforded the same tax credit as the federal exchanges. Now, there's an interesting way that John Roberts and the other associate justices could construe that by striking that provision, but yet at the same time affirming Obamacare by simply saying that there was a discrimination between the federal court and the state court, and then essentially eliminate the discrimination by saying you're all going to get the tax credit. And that's one thing that I see in the Beltway, the arguments that are being presented in this case, that if John Roberts wants to affirm Obamacare, he's got ample opportunity to do it. So it really determines whether or not you're a strict constructionist or a liberal constructionist. And I think the prediction is that John Roberts is going to protect the executive branch by protecting the broad discretion of the function.
Right, but before we get to your talking points here, I do want to have a conversation, if that's okay.
I'm here.
Okay, Alan O. Morton.
I'm hearing you.
Alan O. Morton, attorney at law with us here at 580KIDO. But when we're talking about the decision, did you find the justices' questions unusual that they talked about the consequences of this law being blown up? From a purely legal point of view, that's really not their concern, is it?
Oh, it is in every case. And it's not just this case that they're looking at, but there's a word in Latin that lawyers use a lot in reference to the Supreme Court. It's called stare decisis. And basically, it's the principle of case precedent. How is this case not only going to be decided in this case, but what's the extension arguments that how this law is going to be applied in the future? Because other than one case in and of itself, the Gore v. Bush case, every case has case precedents to the next. And so they're not just looking at how this case is going to be decided, but those coming behind it. And that's what the tenor of the questions that were posed to the attorneys was predicated on, that saying we're not just looking at this particular case but everyone else that will follow.
We'll get back to that point next with Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. Kevin Miller here. You're listening to 580 KIDO.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
All right, he's only been here one segment, and it's heating up in here. I don't know how long we're going to last with Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. He's a professional litigator, and I'm a monkey. Welcome back, sir.
I'm just a country lawyer, Kevin.
Yes, the most dangerous kind. But back to the Supreme Court, and we talk about Obamacare. You seem to think that Justice Roberts, once again, will jump into the boat with the libs and endorse the president's unprecedented power grab. He could go the other way, right? Wouldn't that, I mean, a lot of folks, and you are much closer to the Beltway than I am, have seen Justice Roberts be very uneasy with how the president has treated separation of powers. Your thoughts?
Well, that's a long, drawn-out discussion on that question, but essentially this. The debate goes on as to what is the true function of the executive. Are they there simply to enforce the law that Congress enacts. And in part, that's true. However, all three branches of government play a significant role in the creation of law on their own. Congress, of course, enacts legislation, but the president is able to forge new law by way of executive order. And the judiciary, when there's no statute to interpret, they can make law out of whole cloth. They did it with product liability. There was no statutes initially dealing with the issue of product liability, suing a manufacturer that may not have been negligent, but make them liable anyway under strict liability. That came from the courts. And so what we're seeing is taking the personalities out of it, you know, specifically Obama himself, or say what happened in the preceding administration with the Bush-Cheney administration. We're seeing not so much as what I refer to as the power grab, but just a natural extension. We are going down a road. And we saw this with the last administration with Gitmo, where you have very powerful men that are utilizing the law to create their agenda by essentially baby steps. And that it's the Supreme Court that's basically opened the door for the executive branch to be able to do what they're doing. You know, this whole thing, we'll come to that when we hit the immigration segment. But we see where conservatives will take a strict construction of the Constitution, file their lawsuit, and basically, you know, have the Constitution shoved down their throat. That we saw that with immigration when Governor Walker basically enacted with the right. Arizona legislature, you know, law basically overriding federal law dealing with the deportation of illegal immigrants. And it was the high court that overruled not only the state of Arizona's law that conflicted with federal law, but also said that the executive branch has broad discretion.
Well, then again, it's making up the law as he goes.
Well, that's exactly what
isn't it?
They
I mean,
all do.
Well, not to this extent. You write a law and then you modify it. I don't remember President Bush doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Gitmo was not created by Congress.
We're not talking Gitmo. We're talking about something
that
affects...
We're talking executive orders.
...millions of Americans and really one-sixth of the economy. And we could go on and on. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us. Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get back to my original question. I feel like you're on the stand here with me, so I'm going to redirect, Your Honor. So I thought it was unusual, and a lot of people listening here at 580KIDO thought it was unusual as well, that you had the justices talking about, well, how are people going to get insurance? What will be the cost? Isn't that something that they that shouldn't have anything to do with their conversations? If the thing is unconstitutional, it's unconstitutional. Let Congress, let the administration deal with the consequences. It seems that they're more worried about Obamacare than Obama.
Well, they have a presumption at law that every statute is constitutional until they decide otherwise. And there will be grave consequences if the justices hold, or the majority holds, that Obamacare is unconstitutional. What would that be? Obviously, the intent of several individuals in the political forum, it wants to wipe out Obamacare. But the natural extension is this, which has been the unsung hero of the act. The purpose for Obamacare was to make every American personally responsible for the payment of their own bills. What happens with the indigent care is that when they don't have the money to pay, it's the hospitals, medical providers that apply for assistance for payment from the counties. And those counties have these indigency funds that are funded solely through property tax.
Right.
So when an indigent goes to the hospital, not a doctor, because the doctor won't treat them because they don't have insurance, they go to the ER. And when these big bills, like just an office visit in the ER is $1,500, that bill's presented to the county, and the county ends up having to pay it. In other words, our tax dollars are going to pay it. So the underlying reasoning for Obamacare, which was really undersold by, I thought, this president, was to make everybody personally responsible for their own
and
health care.
And our insurance premiums have been canceled. Our premiums have gone up. Many Americans have gotten hosed out of their insurance.
Totally agree with that. I have said, and I maintain, in argument against a lot of your listeners who have said that Obama was a liar, I totally disagree. It wasn't a lie. It was incompetence. No one foresaw the gap, and they should have saw the gap, what insurance companies were going to be able to do. The Blue Crosses and the Blue Shields saw exactly, yeah. Read this big bill.
He was in on it, though. I mean, let's face it, either incompetent or complicit.
It was not complicit. It was incompetence, because it took everyone by surprise. They ended up trying to fix this through executive order, and that's what we're arguing about
but
here.
But that's how he got the insurance companies on board, because they knew it was good for them. AARP sold out as well.
Absolutely. It was extremely good for the insurance companies, because what they were able to do was they were able to kill policies, reduce benefits, and increase premiums. You know, if you're going to fix pricing, you fix pricing. You know, we've seen this every time that when Nixon used to put the kibosh on certain products, you know, freezing prices with gasoline.
Right.
What happened, you know, thereafter? Prices skyrocketed, you know, when the order was lifted. You know, and it's basically the model of supply and demand. If you're going to go in and meddle with the market, you have to do a comprehensive act, and they should have had the foresight, based upon just history and economics, to freeze those prices. Because that's exactly what he said. If you remember what Obama said, you know, in New Hampshire and every other state, that including Idaho, they came here and said, we're not going to affect your choice of policies, and your premiums will not go up.
And you won't be denied because of previous conditions. We saw how that worked out for America, folks.
But that's true. That did happen. Pre-existing conditions were eliminated.
Well, they ran out of money to pay for it. Coming up next, more of Alan L. Morton, Kevin Miller. You're listening to 580KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO. Well, well, well. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, with us. How am I doing holding up with my arguments here? I mean, you're a professional, world-class attorney, and I'm a man of the people. How am I holding up? Can you be objective grading me here? Is this a clearly competitive sparring match or not?
Kevin, I give you an A+.
Okay. Well, there we go. Blushing already. Let's talk about the illegals, the president, the circuit courts, the Supreme Court. Can you make sense of all this?
Sure. You have to put it in 2 minutes in a historical context. My father used to tell me when I was a kid, be careful what you ask for, because you may get it.
Yes.
And this is exactly what's happened with respect to the immigration issue. Well-meaning conservatives back in 2012... through Jan Brewer, who was the governor of Arizona, challenged the president and the executive branch with respect to their lackadaisical approach concerning the enforcement of the immigration statutes. Basically, what Arizona put on the block saying is, if a person violates the law or they don't have appropriate documentation, we're going to deport them.
Yeah, it was Arizona 1070.
That's right. And so what happened in that particular case was, in the review process, not only was that bill struck down, but the Supreme Court gave basically an open door to the executive branch to extend that to where we are today. Let me point this out. In the Arizona case, that was decided not by 9 justices, but by 8, because Justice Kagan recused herself.
Conflict of interest when she was the Solicitor General.
That's exactly right. I don't think it really was, but
you avoid
the appearance of evil because she was, or the appearance of a conflict because she was the Solicitor General at the time that that law came forward. But a 5-3 decision, which essentially was a supermajority at that level, was rendered striking down the Arizona law, and it was written by a swing justice, by Justice Kennedy. And this is what the Obama administration is underscoring. In that decision, Justice Kennedy wrote, for the majority, a principal feature of the removal system is the broad discretion exercised by immigration officials. Federal officials, as an initial matter, must decide whether it makes sense to pursue removal at all. Meaning what they're saying is, in layman's terms, is the question is, do we deport or don't we deport? To be or not to be? And what a lot of people guess on this show, as well as, the callers talk about, well, this is the law. You have to enforce the law. But the Supreme Court here has opened the door with the Arizona decision saying, well, it's not really what that means. It's the executive branch, the immigration officials that have the broad decision to determine whether or not they're going to deport or not. Now, the president does have, through the powers granted to him under the Constitution, the ability to expunge a record. They can grant a pardon. And, this is the problem that the conservative has in this particular case.
All right, let me jump in here at 580KIVO. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law with us. Kevin Miller in the morning. Wasn't Arizona 1070, as you mentioned, didn't that just mimic federal immigration law that hadn't been enforced, and Jan Brewer was ripped, was vilified, called all these racist names, and basically, Arizona 1070 was federal law that Obama doesn't enforce, that Bush didn't enforce.
Well, it was the federal law on steroids. Basically, what they did was they eliminated the prosecutorial discretion of the local enforcement and basically underscored the difference between may and shall, and said that if a police officer comes up in this hypothetical of an undocumented alien, they're to deport and turn them over and get them out of here. And that's essentially what the law says. That's why you refer to these undocumented aliens as, quote, illegal. But,
well, you're coming here illegally. What would you call them?
Well, they're...
What would you call them?
I believe...
Lawbreakers.
I believe
members of
you're
the Chamber
absolutely
of
right on this. You know, we dance around with political correctness every day in my profession and every day in yours.
Yep.
And the issue is, what are they? You know, the thing that you're taught in military service, right off the bat, when you get off the bus and your gunny is right in your face, they're dehumanizing your enemy. Well, I'm not going to go through the litany of names that my father referred to the Japanese and the Germans, and then in my era, the names that were called to the Vietnamese. But that's the part of the process. If you want to win against an enemy, you've got to dehumanize them. And, of course, there's been a lot of that going on here with these people that have crossed the border without proper documentation.
You mean illegally?
Illegally, or call them whatever you want.
You know, I was at a TV show once in Raleigh, North Carolina. And this shows you how politically correct the crazy world we live in. And Bill Geen, William Geen, who is the chairman of ALIPAC, is on. And Bill and I are talking. And they said, well, if you call them illegal aliens one more time, we're throwing you out.
Really?
Yeah, that was the NBC affiliate in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Really?
Now, I was a lot more politically correct in Raleigh. It was more like a moderator-type gig. And I'm going, ooh, Bill, bad boy. However, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about people enhancing, focusing, massaging the message. Illegal alien, illegal immigrant, undocumented.
Well, you should have told them the story about how you were with Brian Williams and you were both being shot out of the sky in a helicopter. That might have tempered that.
So where do we go? We've got the federal judge telling the president no, the president doing it anyway. He's appealing it. Where does this go?
Well, it's headed to the Supreme Court for, round two. I see this, though, as almost certain death for the argument that Obama did something wrong. When you
shocking
read,
that you would say that.
Well, when you see what I say that is in the reading of the decision by a 5-3 court without Justice Kagan, who you know is going to follow the Obama talking point here. You know, if she had been allowed to participate, or she allowed herself to participate in Arizona, there's no question it wouldn't have been a 5-3 decision. It would have been a 6-3
decision. That was a conflict.
But she has no conflict here. And so if the court goes the way that it did with Arizona, it will be a 6-3 defeat to those that are saying that Obama did something wrong. You know, the principal feature in the deportation system is the broad discretion exercised by immigration officials. And if immigration officials, the cops on the line, have that discretion, you know, so does the president.
Is there any good news from you?
Well, in this particular area, you've asked me about Obamacare, you've asked me about immigration.
Right.
And I'm telling you, this is doing exactly what I thought would happen, which is give the power to the president.
He doesn't need the power. We don't need an imperial president. We need someone to stand up for America. More coming up with Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. Time for traffic now.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, the conversation continuing off the air. And if you're one of our exclusive VIP club members, you can't watch it because we don't have a video stream. Anyway, who needs that when we have AM radio? Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law. So, Obamacare is going to win. The illegals are going to win. Let's go to the gays. What's going to happen with same-sex marriage? Do you have any hope for conservatism, for morality, for how should we put this, for constitutional law here? I mean, the states pass these protections of marriage. What's going to happen there?
Times have really changed, boy, in the last 20 years, when you have the Catholic Church, the Mormon Church, you know, talking about the need to embrace legislation to protect the gay and lesbian movement. Do I have any good news for you? No. You know, not on this particular issue. The issue across the board seems to be in favor of, you know, that nasty concept of equal protection under the law. And when you're having legislation that discriminates against one group of people over another, it's going to get reviewed. Now, here's what I'm really interested in following what happens with our Utah brothers and sisters as to how this is going to end, because as we talked about in the earlier segment about the natural extension of law, how do you grant equal rights to the gay lesbian movement and then go and then say, but, you know, under the concept that consenting adults ought to be able to have free will in determining who they're going to marry, but then turn around saying we're going to limit that to one spouse if consenting adults want more than one spouse. I see that as the natural extension for, you know, the polygamists down in Utah.
So there are no standards. It's marry whoever you want, whenever you want. Look, I saw somewhere where they're two men or two women want to marry a man or vice versa. It's three's company. Forget Jack Tripper. Marriage is over as we know it.
Setting aside the moral code, however you write it, the libertarian portion in me asks the question, what business is it of the government, other than an involuntary tax that they place on people who want to marry by getting a marriage license? What business is it of theirs as to who I decide I want to marry?
Or you want to murder, or you want to rob from?
No,
why
that's
not have
different.
Any, why not
that's
have any
different
standards?
Because if I'm murdering somebody, I'm obviously taking away somebody else's rights.
Maybe they
but
deserve
how,
it.
How am I affected? How is my marriage affected if you or any of your listeners decide, you know, I want more than one spouse?
2,000 years of Western culture, I think, Stan, and I don't know of any civilization that survived that had same-sex marriage in it. Do you?
Well, they said the same arguments about polygamy, but you see the, you know, people get along fine in southern Utah.
We're not talking
about
polygamy.
They see people in the Middle East marrying more than one spouse.
Well, this isn't the Middle East. This is America. And then if I were somebody from Utah and all of a sudden they legalized polygamy, I'd start thinking about a class action suit, because isn't that one of the reasons why they weren't going to put Utah in the Union because of polygamy?
Those concepts about what you just raised, I remember hearing loud and clear the same arguments dealing with the difference, the alleged differences of the races.
Not the same.
Not
the same, counselor.
The arguments.
One is behavior. One is something that you're, I can't control what color I am.
I know, but the arguments that they used back in the 50s in support of separate but equal doctrines, which we all abhorred, bottom line, they say, was based upon the fact that certain Americans, by nature of their color, were not equal to those of another. And I tell you, that's the issue here.
And I'll tell you, we're out of time. Alan L. Morton, attorney at law, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, K. Milley in the Morning, 580-KIDO. Would love for you to take a look at us on Facebook at 580-KIDO. We're like at 400, 475. We need to get to 500. It really just helps me let you know what the show's going on, what's going on with the show. Kevin Miller at Facebook. Kevin Miller on Facebook. Not that Kevin Miller. No, not that one. That Kevin Miller. You'll notice it. Heidi Harris next. Kevin Miller, 580-KIDO.